The U.S. Supreme Court case that could shake the foundation of the online world. I'm David Brancaccio. Good morning to you. First, if it is snowing by you, this will seem a fond memory, but we've gotten some odd warm snaps this season. I was in my home state of Maine last week, hit 55 degrees in mid-February. The weather is connected to the economy, both literally and metaphorically. With the economy, a lot of people worried about inflation have been saying it's sure running warm out there. Let us consult economist David Kelly, Chief Global Strategist at JP Morgan Funds.
I think for weather reasons, as much as anything else, I think the economic data just look better than the underlying trend here. We didn't have any snowstorms in the Northeast in January, and so retail sales were pretty strong. We didn't have much weather disruption to employment, so employment growth was strong. But when we look at the data, both in terms of that and also some of the seasonal patterns that the government expects in the economy, we really think that the data for January weren't as strong, you know, underlying as the headline number suggested. So we do think the economy is actually slowing and is not as strong as the January numbers suggest.
What you're saying is people really worry that the economy is tenaciously strong and that inflation is just not tamping itself down. You're saying, keep an eye out because it could be cooling. We just don't know it quite yet.
Absolutely. I mean, let me give you one example. We're going to get some strong numbers for real consumer spending for January later on this week, but it's going to show that the personal saving rate was less than 3%. Now, before the pandemic, that number was over 7%. And what that means is we're, to some extent, living on borrowed money and borrowed time here. As we get into the spring, when normally retail sales ramp up, I think they're going to have a hard time ramping up. And so I think consumer spending is going to slow down as the spring arrives. I think that's also true with employment. So, you know, the first quarter looks pretty good, but I think by the second quarter, this economy is going to be gasping for air.
All right. We'll see. David Kelly, he's at JP Morgan Funds, Chief Global Strategist there. Thank you very much.
Anytime.
Walmart said this morning its sales and profits beat expectations in the holiday quarter, but it lowered its view on 2023 here, and the stock is down 1%. Also today, Home Depot posted its fall into winter results that showed sales were less than expected, the first miss since just before pandemic. Its outlook for this year also lacked luster. It did make $3.33 billion in the fourth quarter, though, but the stock is down 5% at the moment. The company is earmarking $1 billion to pay its people more in the U.S. and Canada. Starting pay will be at least $15 an hour in all markets, and every hourly person gets some kind of raise this month. U.S. Supreme Court justices today hear oral arguments in a case that questions whether online companies will keep their immunity for things users say and do online. Here's Marketplace's Nova Safo.
Justices are considering whether lower courts have too broadly interpreted Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act. It provides a legal safe harbor for internet companies, saying they're not publishers or creators of speech. They simply host what users create. The case the High Court is hearing today is brought by the family of Noemi Gonzalez, an American college student killed in a terrorist attack in Paris. Her family says YouTube's recommendation engine surfaced up extremist videos and that helped terrorist organizations recruit. If recommendations are a form of speech, as the case argues, then internet companies are not shielded by Section 230. The tech industry says such an interpretation of the law would threaten the internet as we know it. I'm Nova Safa for Marketplace.
News conference yesterday with Turkey's foreign minister, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken pledged $100 million more aid to victims of the huge earthquake in Turkey and Syria, where 47,000 people are believed to have perished. There was a new quake yesterday, a 6.3. Blinken also focused on the $80 million in private donations made by U.S. citizens. Some of that is medical aid and food, but also cash to victims. Marketplace's Stephanie Hughes has more on that.
$150 in American currency. That's the amount the International Rescue Committee, an NGO, has started distributing to households in northern Syria displaced by the recent earthquake. Elias Abu Atta is with the IRC.
It basically allows a family of six members to survive.
For at least a month. Specifically, that family could buy everything in what's called the Survival Minimum Expenditure Basket. This theoretical basket
contains bread, chicken, eggs, oil, soap, sanitary pads, phone data. It's comprehensive.
The reason behind giving cash instead of actual eggs or phone data is because this empowers people to buy what they need. Some might want fewer eggs and more phone data. Also, it's often faster to send cash than eggs. Jacob Kurtzer is with the Center for Strategic and International Studies.
When these disasters happen, cash actually takes on a greater level of resonance and significance because of the speed with which assistance can be distributed.
Kircher says there are some crises, like famines, where outside food is needed. But in places where there are goods and local merchants to sell them, cash
can support ongoing economic activity, as opposed to introducing new commodities from outside an area.
Despite the benefits, some humanitarian groups are still reluctant to distribute cash. Simon Levine, who researches humanitarian policy for the think tank ODI, cites one major problem.
We don't like to let go. We're afraid that people won't use it for the purposes that we want.
Levine says it's important not to rob people who've lost so much already of the power of making a choice. I'm Stephanie Hughes for Marketplace.
Now to what happens to children, given that the fastest growing group of people going to prison are women, many of whom are primary caregivers, family, friends, foster care. Alisa Roth reports now from Minnesota on another option.
The day before Misty Pressler got locked up, she asked her ex-boyfriend if he would take care of her kids. The youngest was 2 at the time. The older ones were 5 and 6.
And the answer is yes, I'll take all 3. I will handle it, whatever we got to do.
But when she got to prison, she made some phone calls and quickly realized he wasn't handling it. More than half of incarcerated women in the U.S. are mothers. And like Pressler, it's up to them to figure out where the children should go while they serve their time. For years, that meant friends or family, or foster care. But that sometimes leads to women losing custody of the kids. Lori Timlin is the parenting coordinator at the women's prison in Minnesota. She says that's a huge worry for the women like Pressler and others she works with.
I'm away from my child. Does this mean that child protection's going to step in and I'm going to lose my right?
There are alternatives, though. A kind of unofficial foster care system that takes kids temporarily and tries to help mothers keep custody. Lucy Olson is with an organization called Together for Good that works with churches in the Twin Cities to find volunteer host families. Although the families are Christian, they'll take in children of any faith.
The goal of our organization is family preservation.
The families take a child for weeks or months while their mother finishes her sentence or figures out other options for the kids.
And we don't ever want a mom to have to choose between the safety of her children or the foster care system.
The host families provide meals for the children, give them a place to stay, and make sure they go to school and doctor's appointments. They also help the child stay in contact with the mother through phone calls and visits. In the regular system, the state gives foster families a stipend to help pay for those things. In programs like Together for Good, the hosts cover the costs, though the churches may help. Olson says that like the state foster care system, her organization does background checks on families and trains them. But not all do. Misty Pressler says at first she was afraid to send the kids to families she didn't know while she was in prison. But she finally decided it was her best bet.
I'm going to lose my kids. I have no other options.
The 3 kids went to families who kept them for more than a year until Pressler was released. In Anoka, Minnesota, I'm Alisa Roth for Marketplace.
In a big workplace experiment in Britain, 61 companies are trying out a 4-day work week. How's productivity? What do workers and bosses feel? The update is that nearly all the companies like it and want to keep it. You're listening to the Marketplace Morning Report from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.